We treat our clients' money like our own. Yes. And when we go and we run a search campaign and we've generated someone clicking an ad that we paid for and they come to a landing page, it hurts deeply when they bounce off of that landing page. So we want to have great messaging on there, but we also want to have something that's in between the messaging and contact us. Some kind of interactive element. It can be a download, but you know, we've been experimenting and talking about things like exit quizzes. How can I get that person to engage with me deeper, answer some questions that make them, again, agitate that problem? I didn't think of that. Maybe I do need to take the next step. Or an ROI calculator. This is too expensive. Show how it pays back. Anything like that that gets them to take that next stair step level up of engagement. We talk about it's 12 to 20 to 30 touches I have to do. I got them to that page. They're interested. What can I provide them that's going to move them up the ladder a little bit? Some kind of interactive element.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Marketing Blender Show. I'm Dacia Coffey, and again, Gene Lewis, the head of client strategy and one of our fractional CMOs, is guest host today. Now, our topic are the top B2B growth hacks, and I am so excited because this is literally like, okay, people, let's get down to brass tacks. Like, how do you drive results as quickly as possible? And really, if I'm being honest, this is about optimizing probably what some companies are already doing and kind of just harvesting the hidden gems, the hidden revenue in their pipeline. So,
absolutely.
All right. So I love this because we end up coming up with a top 10 list. So fun.
These are not in any order.
Nope. They are not in any order. This is rapid fire. All right. So Gene, kick us off. What's your top one?
Well,
or your first one, I should say.
One, we were just having a conversation about a very intentional, sometimes quick revenue strategy.
Yeah.
Marketing hack is to fish where you've already fished. Go back into the pond of leads, contacts, anything that's touched your business before, and reach out to them. They've already indicated a level of interest. Now go back and give them something of value, rewarm those old leads, see if you can get them to come back and become a full-time customer.
Absolutely. Yeah. The number one loss in win-loss ratios is no decision. It's not to a competitor. The number one. And so when somebody ghosted you, when somebody did not make a decision, they still have that problem. And they had built trust with you, but probably they just got overwhelmed or they reprioritized. And so you're right. Like going back and fishing in that existing pond is not just good for you in short-term revenue. It's good for that person you're reaching out to. And it oftentimes can actually accelerate the sales cycle because right place, right time, because you already had background on them.
And it's also a classic thing with brands, companies, marketers who say, I'm not getting anything from my marketing because no one booked a call. But you've got all these contacts that had a level of interest.
Yes.
Go talk to them again.
Yes.
Get them to come back.
You paid
for those. Offer
something
of value. Absolutely.
Agreed. Yeah. In attention, time, and money.
That's right.
They did not get into your CRM and your automation system on accident.
That's exactly right.
So yeah, go harvest that.
Yep.
I love it. Well, so that does lead me to the next one, which is the ongoing email nurture. And I think what people I think fundamentally understand email nurture, right? Like nurturing a lead, getting ahead of the sales cycle, catching people when they're in the research. But then when it comes down to tactics, email's not sexy and everybody hates email, so nobody really wants to do it. But the reframe should be email as a lead generator, like a actual lead source for you. And that's the whole point of marketing funnels. But people just go, ugh, email. And it's just a huge opportunity if done well, if you have a good writer, if you have good messaging.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a huge opportunity.
Well, and I always hear from clients or prospects that no one reads email. And I always challenge them, I guarantee you read email today. You read email because it interested you and you were engaged with it. And you see, depending on the source you look at, it's anywhere from a $35 to $45 return on email nurture. A real key to it is make sure you're providing value, real value. So go back to your brand personas and what problems and challenges are they facing and what can I address in my email nurture to help them solve that problem. I'm constantly building trust to get them closer to the sale.
Agreed. And these are not cold, spammy
emails.
That's the one thing I wanted to delineate is we are talking about nurturing people with real value.
Exactly.
That's going to build great customer value exactly. for them and for you. So
yeah, these are people who have opted in, downloaded a lead generator, you've met at a networking function, they've already had an initial contact. Now we're just going to keep providing value to
yeah,
them.
Yeah, exactly. One of our clients calls it warm and informed.
That's right.
We're taking right. them yeah. along the yeah. pathway of warm and informed. Yeah. So, okay, so that's number two. What have you got as number three?
Don't sleep on personal networking as a lead generation strategy. Mm. Too many people want to let tools and tactics generate their marketing, especially in the B2B world. You are the brand.
Yeah.
When you're out and you're talking to someone, you are representing the brand. Do you have a good one-liner elevator speech? Can you succinctly answer what do you do when someone asks you that? Do you have a really good keynote, really good selling presentation when you have the opportunity? Does it draw people in? Help tell their story, show them success. Personal networking can be a tremendously profitable lead generation tactic.
I really love this. Daisy is amazing at activating this with her clients. And I think it's important to say, hey, we're talking about the year 2024, right? So networking includes social media engagement. Sure. It includes connecting people that will derive value from one another and making these softer, warm introductions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it includes simply being a human and saying thank you and just delighting the people that you know and being in it with them. So yes, there's the physical and in-person component, but it shouldn't end just because you're behind your desk. And even commenting on someone else's social media feed, oh my gosh, you know, tagging someone, saying good job, and just really extending that humanity. You're right, you are your brand. And so your core values should be showing up in your personal habits, in your personal feeds, and in the ways that you personally engage with your own company's marketing. I think that's a brilliant one, well, and it's left on the table.
You made a good point there. Something you can do that's actually personal networking and providing a service is introducing two of the people in your ecosystem.
Yeah.
We try to do that with our clients.
Yeah.
Well, you're in this service, you have this service, you two guys ought to get to know each other. I don't personally gain out of it, at least immediately, but I'm providing that service, and that's a form of networking as well. Again, it's all about how do I provide value.
Yeah. In B2B, I don't know. I can't think of a single client that we have where there is not a heavy relationship aspect in their business model.
Exactly.
No matter what they sell and no matter how the volume or number of clients they have, there's always relationship in those.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. So number four, I'm going to introduce this one, but this one is really yours. And it's this idea of interactive tools instead of just educational tools.
Exactly.
So, you know, instead of a static thing that provides value, it's one where someone can engage and pull value from and personalize that value. So give me some examples of this, because
sure.
this is a more advanced tactic, but I think most people have such amazing subject matter expertise and they just don't realize how to leverage that
exactly.
in their marketing tools.
Well, we treat our clients' money like our own.
Yes.
And when we go and we run a search campaign and we've generated someone clicking an ad that we've paid for and they come to a landing page, it hurts deeply when they bounce off of that landing page. So we want to have great messaging on there, but we also want to have something that's in between the messaging and contact us. Some kind of interactive element. It can be a download, but you know, we've been experimenting and talking about things like exit quizzes. How can I get that person to engage with me deeper, answer some questions that make them, again, agitate that problem. I didn't think of that. Maybe I do need to take the next step. Or an ROI calculator. This is too expensive. Show how it pays back. Anything like that that gets them to take that next stair-step level up of engagement. We talk about it's 12 to 20 to 30 touches I have to do. I got them to that page. They're interested. What can I provide them that's going to move them up the ladder a little bit? Some kind of interactive element.
I mean, I love that. It's giving such great value to them, progressing them towards what they want. And when somebody starts personalizing that messaging, oh man, like that is of real service to them and of course to your pipeline as well. So, I think when I'm thinking about how to help clients figure out where those interactive tools come from, think about the conversations that happen early in those discovery calls, like those little aha nuggets where you have learned over time to ask the correct questions, so better questions to get them thinking differently about their business, that is usually for me the genesis of a really profound interactive tool.
Yeah, just think of in your own purchasing, your own experience. If someone solved a small problem for you, and now you have a big problem that they can also solve, I'm very likely to go back to them because they built that level of trust and demonstrated that they can solve my problem for me.
Absolutely.
So that's what we want to do. Think about your target persona, what problems they face. Can we solve one of the smaller ones? And then get them to come back to pay us to solve the larger one.
Yeah, love it. All right, what have you got next?
Scarcity. This is one that's been around a long time. And you know, some people think it's kind of, you know, marketing mojo, but it works.
Yeah, it does work.
If you've got 5 seats to a LinkedIn Live, you know, there's only 5 seats, you better register now. Or today only, you can book an exclusive one-to-one call. Create that scarcity with your client that increases the relevant value of this to me. I better get on this because there's only a few seats. I want to learn more about this. Limited time offers. You've seen them everywhere, but they work, especially if it's in the right context and delivered the right way.
Yeah. And you know what I like about this is, number one, you're pointing to the fact that you're talking about actual scarcity. So it's just tell the truth, right? You know, I mean, there is some embedded scarcity, and we sometimes just forget to say that. And then consistency, of course, is the only magic bullet in marketing. And you can create this natural scarcity where you're like, wow, we only have the time to do one live event a quarter, or to offer this once because there's so much team or manpower that needs to support this, you know, high value initiative. And so, like, helping people to realize, oh, this really is only once a quarter. If I don't attend now or jump
days.
Now or book this now, like, I'm kicking the can down the road. And again, that's just that natural scarcity that matched with consistency really helps people derive value, anticipate things where you're going to drive that, you know, and do something special for the market.
Yeah, and you can see as we go through these how they all kind of build on each other.
Yes.
You know, if I pay for a digital ad, I got somebody to come, I've got their contact information, now I put them in the nurture. They've been in there a while. Now I'll do an old lead regen with them, something of value. You're just constantly working those people who have indicated interest. So all these can kind of build on each other and be implemented as part of a full integrated marketing campaign.
By this point, you guys have figured out that both Daisy and I are chief marketing officers. But what you might not realize is there's a whole team of us at the Marketing Blender, and we also have outsourced marketing teams. So if you're curious about how we break revenue plateaus, how we untangle sticky messaging, and how we make sure to drive exciting return on investment and profitable growth, check us out at themarketingblender.com. But it's not just for mid-market companies. We've also figured out how to scale it down for small businesses too.
The Marketing Blender Lab is our program just for small businesses looking to hit their first million in revenue. You still get to work with a real chief marketing officer, and we use the same structures and systems that work to grow big businesses to help you meet and exceed your goals.
So again, if you're interested, check out themarketingblender.com. See you there. You know, there's some industries where this is natural. Again, you know, like car industries, like they've got to clear out 2023 inventory, you know, or something like that. And thinking about that inside of your business, just tell the truth. You know, I mean, like those, because those, then it's believable. That's where it's like, it doesn't feel like that, you know, schmarmy, weird. You're just telling the truth. We only do this once a quarter because, or hey, here's a natural trend happening in the industry, and this is why this is an offer now and it only comes around once a year, or this is why we're offering this. And if it's true, which is key, truth, you know, I mean, it really does resonate because people are like, oh my gosh,
that
helped me to really understand the value now and why they would do this.
Yep.
Absolutely. Okay. So the next one is one of my favorites. The audience is probably gonna be like, here we go again, but customer marketing. If you have to drive near-term revenue, you start at the closest to sale. And that means the people there are already paying you, right? So cross-selling, upselling, value adds, innovation opportunities, but doing it on purpose. Like I see too often clients are like, well, we're really good at what we do. We care a lot about our great delivery, but then they don't talk about it. They don't say thank you. They don't find little ways to, you know, celebrate milestones and even just add emotional value to just wrap this great, you know, environment experience around customers. Like, you're supposed to be awesome at what you deliver. You don't get extra brownie points for that. And it's been a while since I looked at this study, but, you know, typically most clients are lost not because of a problem, but because of apathy.
That's right.
And that alone, like, oh my gosh, like, a customer just did not feel the love. And so that's why they left. But you didn't do anything wrong. That's painful. So being really thoughtful about that customer retention, you know, and those customer extensions, because that is an indicator that you are generating so much value that they want more and more and more of you. Win-win. You should be doing that on purpose.
Yeah, a few things come to mind there. One, we've all seen where a new customer gets a really hot deal, but the existing customer has been with you for years gets not such a hot deal. And that... Yeah, causes a lot of churn because you don't value me and I've been paying you. The other thing is, yeah, so many times we get a customer, they go into the existing customer pile and we're focusing all our efforts on new customers. And we start again having that churn. This really hit a recurring revenue business model like a SaaS model or something like that, where very quickly when you're successful, your recurring revenue is going to outpace your new revenue. And if you don't talk to those customers, service those customers, have someone who's literally responsible for that customer in your organization, they'll start dropping out the bottom. And you cannot fill the top back enough to overcome that. And then again, I know we're repeating the same thing a lot too, but understand my customer's problems. We're solving this one for them. Say, hey, we know you have this problem as well. We have a service that could also solve that one. That's how you kind of cross-sell and upsell. Again, it's not do you know all the great things we do? But we know you have this problem as well, and we can solve this. So just a lot of big revenue opportunity in that one right there.
Yeah, and you know, you and I talk about this tool frequently, but in Blue Ocean Strategy, that buyer utility map, you know, like if you're trying to unearth value adds, you know, going back to that great book and just looking at that and doing that exercise around where's friction and where's other places that very often you can solve for free or for very low cost, but very high value. And then one other that comes to mind for me, you actually just did this not too long ago for one of our clients, is finding a side door to revenue. Like, that's my, you know, like my little hack for it. But, you know, what is something that you can monetize right now? And this oftentimes are things like in that buyer utility map where our clients are taking it for granted.
Yep.
And people would pay
that's
for
right.
that.
Right. That's a great like annual planning tool or process to look at, is what are we doing inside our organization with a process or deliverable that we could package up and sell? And a lot of it can be a project management thing. It can be something else we're doing. It's an internal, really core competency that can become another revenue stream. And you don't have to have a lot of investment in it. You've already got a marketplace for it. That's a really good way to look at how we're going to deliver this year's number. What else do we have in our organization that we can sell as an additional revenue stream?
You know, and this is such a great scenario where hiring an external pro who advocates for you, you will sit in your own blind spots because you see it every day. You know, like that becomes your new normal. And so having someone who walks other halls all the time, works with other clients in your industry or externally, right, and has a wider point of view around why you're special, that alone can drive such significant ROI and even business model additive value. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they'll bring a perspective, but we didn't think of it that way. You know, we deal with it every day, but that can be ROI for you right there. Just delivering that and selling that as a product or service.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. What have we got up next?
The messaging one. Of course, we had to come back to that, right?
Oh gosh. Of course. I know.
This one, we're specifically talking about mirroring. And in our vernacular, that's, again, understanding the pain point and being able to play that back. And again, think about that in your personal relationships. When someone understands and has empathy with you, they get me, right? This person gets me. When you know a brand or a company that gets you, now I've got that emotional connection to them. And again, it gets glossed over a lot, especially in the B2B professional environment. But if I can understand your real problem, especially around emotion, and show you that I get you and I understand with that empathy, can go a long way toward building loyalty with a potential prospect.
Oh my gosh. So two things immediately come to mind. Take this one and layer it on in lockstep with any other one on this list in total magic. And then the other thing is, you never get to skip this one, right? So some of the common places are sales follow-up emails. And a sales follow-up email sounds like, hey, it was great talking to you. I really enjoyed our conversation, or thank you so much. That's not mirroring. That's nothing to do with that person. Now that's a nicety, but in email, niceties are low value, big waste anymore, unfortunately, right? Because like, for instance, take Outlook or your phone. What can you see? You can see beginning of the subject line. You can be the beginning of the sentence. So that first sentence should always have a you in it. You said, you asked for, you prioritized, you. And so then immediately you're triggering two things. This is about them. And you're communicating, I really listened. Like, I am advocating for your point of view. I'm not just talking about our product and service. And so that one in the first slide, right, of any presentation should be about the audience, should be about the person. The first sentence in an executive summary, that should be mirroring. Like, every single first you have should be about that other person. And that servant leadership approach really does bind attention and bind relationship and increase trust.
Teaching moment.
Okay.
Something she was talking about there that you can do in your own communications is go through, take a given piece of communication, be a presentation, piece of sales collateral, a website, and do red, yellow, green. Everything she just said that talks about you is red. Everything that talks about them is green. Anything that's just kind of a description of a product or service or benefits would be yellow. Now, if you do that, if your piece of communication is full of red, you got a problem. It needs to be talking about the customer, the prospect. Very easy to do. So anytime you see us, this, it's red. Anything talking about the client or the pain point, that's a green. And you can kind of analyze and audit your communications that way.
So good. So good. You know what I love is when we did the episode about messaging, we talked about it's simple but not easy, and it takes discipline. I love that because it's an actionable way to start building those discipline habits of being so other-centric, customer-centric, that it then pulls back into all of your natural messaging and your natural positioning. I love that tip.
It's a fascinating behavior, and we see it with clients all the time. I want to prove how much I know.
Yeah.
And they do know a ton.
Yeah.
It's really smart people, and they start talking about their brand and all their great stuff. And I've had clients in my own personal business, I interrupt them and said, no one cares. They do not care. What they care is you get them, you understand them, then you can solve their problem.
That's right.
And mirroring is the first step in that process.
And that's real specialization. Yep. Like, nowadays, being amazing at your thing is table stakes. That's why. So that's it. Okay, so the next one is a different direction, but go back and look at your keyword strategy. And first and foremost, if anybody's listening doesn't know what a keyword strategy is, this one is for you, like right now, immediately. But in digital marketing, I see something happen a lot where people think they're delegating to a professional, but they're abdicating responsibility around why did you make that decision and what are you doing? And are you capable of educating me and bringing me along so that I'm learning why digital marketing is working for us and my questions can add value and collaboration? And so I think that one is so, so big. And keyword strategy is about your business.
Absolutely.
And about identifying opportunities. And a lot of times people are surprised to realize that the competitors online are very different than the people that drive you crazy offline. And so it's a totally different ecosystem. And that keyword strategy is absolutely about buying intent, buyer's journey, and you can learn so much about humans and what they're doing on their pathway to a purchase.
Absolutely. And the only thing I would add there is don't do it yourself.
Oh.
Hire an expert, partner with an expert that does digital marketing, is an expert in it to really help you hone that in. And the more you deal with it as a marketer and you start searching yourself, you see, you know, this term is probably not typical that I'm putting in.
Yeah.
So how many opportunities are being missed because you don't have a good keyword strategy?
So well said. And you know, I was talking to a head of marketing the other day, and I was, like they're considering working with us. And one of the things I pointed out was when we come in, whether for short engagement or long term, what happens is you get to put that professional on the side of the table with leadership, with the head of sales, with the rest of their company, where now their voice is being heard and they get to be a part of the solution instead of just the facilitator. And so, and that's a great point. I mean, we've had engagements where our clients have a very talented digital marketing agency. It's not our business model to unseat good people and good groups, right? But we literally came in as consultants to our client and to their agency that they hired because we have the bandwidth to be able to do deeper research and to walk alongside in partnership. And it's not that that agency was doing anything wrong, but man, that additive value is just huge, that collaboration piece.
So more minds looking at it.
Yeah, exactly. And just making sure that no stone's gone left unturned. And every so often, that should be just a best practice where it's not about finding out if they're doing anything wrong. It's about just getting some fresh thinking in there and going, okay, what are some new opportunities now that it's a different year, different phase in our business?
Definitely.
Okay. The next one, what have you got on the list?
Referral of, you know, and I love this, and I'll get off a little geeky on this one, but you know, we think of basic referrals. You know this person, I'm going to introduce you and you should use their service. I love really taking them to the next level. There's such an opportunity, again, to kind of mine that database you have and send those people who love you a request to get a referral and do it very intentionally. Send them something of value, show the love to them. And then when they refer you, they get something. And then the person they refer to gets a special deal because that your customer referred you. And you can set it up with landing pages and track it and have a whole very intentional outreach service for referrals that can, again, deliver very high ROI. I was telling you the story about buying luggage.
Yeah.
And you know, I hadn't bought luggage in 30 years. Lady says, hey, I like this one, so I bought that one. It can have such an impact when someone just refers a brand or product or service or person. So I really like trying to build those very intentional, use some technology to make it really efficient.
Yeah. Tracking, know, I mean, you're pointing to that, right? But even if it's not a paid referral strategy, track your referrers. Track, you know, how are you showing them love? When was last time you connected with them just as a human? You know, it goes back to that networking. This is a great example, but that intentionality, like, it should not be serendipity. And we see this so often. Like, it should be a great thing that, you know, the vast majority or 50% of your business is coming from referrals. But the reason it's usually not is because people are just hoping it happens. This should not be a hopeful thing. This should be a intentional, we know how people refer us, we know when, and we know how to stay top of mind. We have a couple clients where social media is a key element of their referral strategy, and it's not just a customer strategy, because it's about staying top of mind and knowing how we can bring value to those referral partners. Love it. Okay, so that brings us to number 10. We got to work hard not to chase the squirrel on this one, Gene. So revenue strategy. Yep. So what we're talking about here, yes, but it's knowing what your numbers are and where your revenue is going to come from. So what portion's coming from customer? What portion's coming from recurring revenue if you've got that business model? What portion is net new? How does net new break down? Because one of the things that we see so frequently is people don't slow down long enough to realize what their real number is. I mean, we have some clients where we're like, okay, so you're really scared, but you actually only need 5 clients this year. 5. That is when I hear 5, now they might not be easy to get, right? Like, there might be a lot of complexity around this, but when I hear 5, that actually dictates a very specific set of tactics that I'm going to focus on and a whole set that I'm going to deprioritize until we start maturing their marketing mix. And this is really, really important. Knowing your numbers is critical.
Yeah, it is. it's the internal look that separates a good company and a great company.
Yeah.
If I understand just that right there. So if I know I got to get those five and these tactics work for me, so then everything is focused around those. And you know what else that does is drives budgeting. So now this is the budget I need to spend to get those, and it drives tracking. So now I've got these number of leads coming in, and I'm tracking that every month, what's working, what's not. I can keep tweaking the mix. That's real, what we call back in the day, brand management. I'm managing this brand. It's not just throwing tactics out. They're very intentional. And a lot of times it can make you take a hard look at, are what we talking about realistic? And then is it realistic in a given context? Yeah. So we may want to double the business. Well, that's a great goal. Do we have the right tactics lined up to get there? Is it realistic? Are we going to spend? Can we get creative to deliver that? What are those tactics that can get us to that? We see far too often just plugging in a number and then going about business. Yeah. And then everyone's looking at each other, why is it not working? We didn't intentionally plan it. Again, sounds simple, but it's not easy.
Right.
You really have to sit down. But it's extremely impactful when you do it. And you really break down, your term is always, where the leads are really going to come from.
Yes.
So how are we going to get those?
Yes.
And you can see them circle back to a lot of these tactics. I can get this many out of email, I can get this out of networking, but where are they really going to come from? And then having the discipline to put those in a tracking and scorecard system to see what's working and what's not.
Exactly.
Just huge. It's huge in running a business.
And you know, what I love about this top 10 list is that this is aggressive. This is not, oh, these will work someday. I mean, these are, what can you get now? What changes can you make today? And how can you, like you said, be a business of excellence, a thinker with excellent thinking, excellent questions, excellent opportunities in front of you versus overwhelm and just throwing a whole bunch of things up and saying that did or didn't work for us, move on. So this is so fun. So you guys, here, let me clarify though, what the number one action item is grab some thinking time. Whether you are an executive, an entrepreneur, or head of marketing, it is time to take this list and just carve out time to go, where are the opportunities that we're ignoring that we can actually really harvest right now? So thank you so much. Here we are. We are well into 2024. So this has been so fun. Gene, thank you so much for coming back
on. Thank you. This was fun. Love talking this stuff.
Me too. All right, you guys, hit that subscribe button. See you next week and onward and upward.